Hello, this is Henry Will, and welcome to another PMLessonsLearned.com conference call. Today is September the 15th, 2011, and this is podcast number 125. Well, we're really happy that you joined us. We've been taking the summer off, and now we're back in the swing of things. We hope that you've gotten a chance to rest a little bit, maybe take a holiday or a vacation, and now you're ready to jump back into project management. Tonight we're going to have someone sharing some lessons learned and some best practices with us. It's called Peace Through Project Management. But before we get into that, I just wanted to make sure that everybody knows that we do have a page on our website that has information about volunteers. We're always looking for volunteers to help us out, and there's information there. You can see the kind of volunteer opportunities that we have. We are looking for someone to run our, to help out with our PM job shop calls. We've had people volunteering to help out with that. They're having some difficulty getting speakers and whatnot, so if anybody would like to volunteer to help out with PM job shop, that's a call we usually have on the second Thursday, and those people that come together on that call to discuss career topics having to do with project managers, and some of it really applies to anybody as far as career topics are concerned. And I think you probably all know that we have three calls a month. There's the first call every month is our PMP exam study prep call. The second one is our PM job shop call. And the third Thursday every month is this call, which is our PM best practice call and PM lessons learned call. This is the call that started it all. And we started this all the way back in several years ago in the year 2006. So we've been going for quite a few number of years now. We'd really like to hear from people that listen in on the podcast. So if you can, contact us through our email address at share, that's S-H-A-R-E, at PMLessonsLearned.com. We'd really like to hear what you think about the podcasts and if you have any suggestions or if you want to help out with anything. We're just a group of project managers helping project managers to make a difference. That's what we're all about. So tonight we have a presentation. Like I said, it's called Peace Through Project Management. You know, this year marks the 10th anniversary of the events that took place on September the 11th, 2001. We just had a remembrance of that this past weekend. And Americans bonded together in a way that probably hasn't happened since probably the World Wars and the Depression. And this was a reminder of tolerance for others and people being respectful for each other and looking out for each other. And there was also more tolerance in the workplace. Well, Ron Krakowski has come and put this presentation together called Peace Through Project Management. And he's going to be talking to us about that this evening. Just to give you a little bit of the background of Ron, Ron is a senior technology and business management consultant. He's also a PMP, a project management professional, as certified by Project Management Institute. And he has over 20 years of professional management experience in several different corporate environments. So we're happy to have Ron with us this evening. And Ron, I don't want to delay us any further from hearing this topic. Why don't you go ahead and take it away?
Okay, thank you, Henry. It's a pleasure to be here tonight to share with the group. And you did already jump in and mention about the anniversary that we just went through for September 11th of 2001. And basically, you know, you look at the fact that we did come together. There were quite a few memorials that took place. I attended a few personally as well. And the first slide, we talk about the fact that, you know, the president back in 5-1 said, he quoted, after 9-11, Americans bonded together as a common family toward a common resolve. And if you remember back to September 11, 2001, that's exactly what happened. People were more helpful than ever towards each other. They smiled at each other more. They thought of others more, and they thought outside themselves to be helpful, to be tolerant. And that tolerant actually was found in the workplace as well, more so than ever before that I can recall. And if you think about things, why does it have to be around crisis? You know, you start thinking about these types of things, and, you know, why can't we be more tolerant with each other all the time? Why can't we smile more? You know, why do these things have to be short-lived and only around crisis? I mean, we've seen it happen again recently with the hurricanes. Hurricane Irene came through, and people, again, bonded together, helping each other. You know, we had an earthquake up the East Coast, even that mild event, people, you know, for the day, you know, were hanging out with each other, you know, trying to make sure everybody was okay. And we're seeing the fires in Texas, the same thing. So my question basically is, why does this bonding need to be reactive? It's really reactive bonding. A situation happens, we come together, and it doesn't last very long. And my answer to that is it doesn't have to be just reactive bonding. It really can be proactive bonding. And we see this happening. Next week, we're going to see this International Day of Peace, September 21st. And basically, my question would be to the group is, does everybody even know this day exists? You know, is anybody planning to do anything for this day? And what it's all about, it's a day, a peace day, that's recognized, and it was put back 30 years ago and put in place, and we celebrate it once a year. It's basically a day and a week wrapped around it for people to think outside themselves and focus on inspiring the bigger picture on how to help the world. And it's each and every one of our own actions of global consciousness and tolerance and taking part in existing initiatives in our communities is what it's all about. So if you look at events that are going to be planned for next week, it's happening globally. You see things that, you know, actually things actually started last week in 9/11. You had Peace Through People conference in New York took place. 9/11 Day, something sponsored by the My Good Deed organization, where you can put a tribute up for people for 9/11. You have PMI Group in New York actually got together and partnered with the group to do cleanup in Riverside Park. Out in Kansas, they're actually doing something called Peace a Pie, where they're going to take the toppings for the day and put them in a peace sign on each pizza they make. In Pittsburgh, they're going to have something called Make the World Smile. You know, just smile at your neighbors, smile at people you come in contact with. There's Yoga for World Peace going on in Mexico. There's Youth for Peace concerts in Nigeria. There's Hugs for Peace taking place in Iran. In Italy, they're doing around photography called Visions of Peace. And globally, there's masses, lectures, meditations, and seminars that are taking place globally with a consciousness of how do we add to peace. So let's take a look for a minute for what are we talking about with peace? Peace is pretty big. It's many definitions around peace.
Ron?
Yes.
This is Henry. I just wanted to mention to everybody on the call that if you're interested in reading a little bit about this, Ron does have information on his blog. It's ronkrakowski.blogspot.com. That's ronkrukowski.blogspot.com. And if you do want to follow along the presentation is available by going to our website at pmlessonslearned.com and looking at the link on the left-hand side. You'll have to scroll down to get to it that says Files and Presentations, and you'll be able to download the presentation there. I forgot to announce that at the beginning. But if you look at Ron's blog, he has an entry for Peace Through Project Management that talks about this Peace Day that he is explaining now. So you might be interested in taking a look at his blog, too. Sorry about that interruption, Ron, but I thought that might
no
be
problem.
A helpful point.
Thank you. Now, what we're really looking at is I'm focusing on one area of peace, a state of mutual harmony between people or groups, especially in personal relations or relationships, to try to live in peace with your neighbors. Basically, I think we can, you know, do something in that realm. And this, again, should be an everyday thing. It really shouldn't be just tied to crisis or events that pull us together. And it's really not about just celebrating Peace Day or Peace Week. It's really what we need to do internally to create peace, to help create peace in the world. And again, you know, how do we do this proactively? You know, as a group of professionals, where do we start? So my answer to that is we need to start by shifting our personal and our corporate consciousness. And you might ask, well, why do we need to do that? Why do we need to shift our corporate consciousness and our personal consciousness? Well, you know, profit no longer is the only bottom line. Employees are not machines. They bring feelings, emotions, values, and belief systems to their organization. business, although still about making money, it's also about making a difference, and making a difference for individuals and all of humanity. And when a company starts being mindful of its employees, its customers, the ecology, and all of humanity, you get something what's called sound economic service. And basically, you know, that's what businesses are striving for these days in order to be competitive and actually beat their competitors. So let's take a look at the evolution of management. Now, what I have here on the slide is basically something called a Wordle. And basically, these words in this Wordle basically capture the essence of what I feel management used to be. The old formula for success in the old ways of management were aggression and power is what got you successful. And that's pretty much a traditional model. And if you look at some of these words here, you know, criticism, negativity, insincerity, deceit, hidden agenda, intimidation, I think we've all been, you know, in a situation where some of these, we can say we lived through these. But one of the things that come off the chart to me is something called blame. You know, it's very easy to blame people, to blame situations, to not take it in our own ownership that, you know, we're responsible for these things. And it reminds me of a story that back in the day when I was working as a project manager, you know, one of my managers came in. It was a situation, we had a production problem, and he came into my office and said, I really need you to tell me who we're going to blame for this one. He said, I need to go to my management and tell them who's responsible for it. And I looked at him and I said, well, if you're going to blame somebody, we're going to blame me. And he looked at me and says, well, Ron, why would you want to take the responsibility for this issue? I said, well, because I don't believe in blame. If you look at the word blame, and you just take a line and put a line slash through the right after the B, and you break it up into two pieces, you know, you get what it says, be lame. And I told my boss, I said, I don't want to be lame. I said, do you know what lame means? I said, it means weak and ineffectual, and that's not me, so I'm not going to blame anybody. So he says to me, he says, well, again, I really need you to tell me who's responsible. I said, well, I'm responsible for this. And if, again, if you look at the word blame, the last two letters are ME. I said, blame ends with me. I said, now, if you want to talk about how we're going to discuss how we're going to fix the situation, I can have you some solutions within the hour, but I will not give you a name of somebody I'm going to blame. And I think that's where we're starting to get more. You know, we need to get away from that blame game. It doesn't work, and it's very ineffective. So what we're trying to get to is we're looking the new way, you know, with a consciousness shift, to be more aligned with the basic rules of life's values. You know, the new formula of success should be loving and caring plus inclusiveness. And if you look at some of the words on this slide, you know, things like integrity, caring, fairness, empathy, teamwork, compassion, you know, sharing, positive attitude, yes, and even effective use of humor. You know, we don't need to take ourselves so serious. We can be a little levity in our organizations. There is a place for humor if it used correctly and effectively. So again, this is where we want to evolve to as managers, is to be pushing forward with, you know, embracing these basic rules of life and bringing this to the people we work with and the people that work for us and even people that we work for. You know, and we look at the fact that corporations actually are aiding in creating peace. And, you know, corporations do get it. So basically, corporations are baking in the fabric of their principles, these types of things, their mission statements. You know, they're putting in things that talk about respect for individuals, teamwork, you know, more global concerns. And, you know, it does remind me, though, of a story I saw that two companies that went through a merger. Actually, one company brought its principles to the table, and another company brought their principles to the table. And they started to have disagreements on which principles would survive. But the bottom line is, if you looked at those principles from both companies closely, the essence was saying the same thing. So again, companies do get it. They are, you know, moving towards that creating more peace in the office place and also throughout the world. You know, they're sponsoring community events. You know, there's runs, there's walks, there's, we all know, United Way, Children's Miracle Network. There's all types of events that are sponsored. Companies are going green. They do have care for the ecology, for the environment. You know, lower carbon footprint is big. Water reduction in some of the offices that I've seen. Paper reduction. Efficient data centers that are being built or retooled. And prayer groups and spirituality classes and seminars are even being allowed on site in companies that I've seen and worked at. In fact, I can tell you that I worked for a client and as a consultant, and I used to use the auditorium for my major meetings. And I was reminded that by 12 o'clock on that meeting day that I had to have the team out of the auditorium because coming in behind me was a Bible study group who was going to be doing their Bible study in that auditorium. So the headline here is spirituality is sweeping through corporate America. There's articles in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Financial Post, and Business Week that talk to the fact that CEOs are discussing their spirituality more openly now. Torah readings are happening at Microsoft, Islamic studies at Intel, Quran classes at Boeing, and even the World Bank is gaining a reputation for enlightenment. And we need to ask ourselves, as managers and people in corporate, what are we personally doing to support our corporations? You know, we can't just be on the sideline and be spectators. The corporation can take it so far and put in the framework, but we really need to carry out those missions. So the question is, again, are we standing on the sideline or are we partaking in these types of activities? So what are the benefits of corporate consciousness of peace? Well, if you look at this picture here, you start looking at the fact that, you know, we need to balance these areas, you know, employees, customers, community, ecology. By balancing those, we basically can create more creativity in our offices, which leads to more productivity and finally comes back with more revenue and more profits. As I said before, the corporate entity sets the framework, the principles, the policies, the corporate mission, creates the environment, but it's the people that need to embrace it consciously and carry out that mission. So aside from corporations, we have peace organizations out there. If you do a Google search on Peace Through, you'll see quite a number of organizations that come out. So Peace Through Business, e-commerce, education, Peace Through People, Peace Through Photography, Peace Through Science, sports, technology training, are just some of the ones that come out. And there's lists and lists of these. And these are groups that are consciously focused on activities to increase peace in society. So I got to thinking, why not peace through project management? That's one term I didn't see when I did my Google search. And let's start with the basics. You know, after all, what is a project manager? You know, according to the PMBOK, a project manager is the person assigned by the performing organization to achieve the project objectives. Okay, so that's nice, but, you know, how can we be ambassadors of peace? Well, according to the IPM newsletter that came out a couple weeks ago, there's about 15 to 20 million practicing project managers worldwide. We're part of every type of business, not-for-profit and government. We're responsible for delivering things that we use every day. And I think by mastering the soft skills and taking it up a notch, I think we truly can be ambassadors of peace in our organizations. Yeah, but we might ask the next question, why do we need to be concerned with creating peace? Well, let's think about the reports we see with a number of unsuccessful projects we have. There may be a correlation. More peace in the office may increase the number of successful projects that are done. We know we have a global workforce. We're connected by technology, but we have to go a little further to connect people to make people feel like they really belong to a team. I think we need to strengthen our companies. And basically, why not just improve the quality of life for someone else? I mean, after all, doesn't it really feel good when we've helped someone? And again, we have to ask ourselves, what am I doing to contribute to peace in my day-to-day activities and actions? So one of the things I would ask that, you know, from this session, that you might take home a little bit of homework and write down some of what you feel are contributions you're making to peace in your workplace. And I would also expand that. What are you doing to add to peace in your personal life, outside the office? And then I would also do on the flip side, what are the things you may be doing that are detracting from peace, from your business and your personal life. And have a list. And it's something for you to work with and look at and just get an awareness of where we really are in this. So there's some interesting trends that I'm seeing. The first thing here we're looking at is the article from the Wall Street Journal. It basically says exiting employees are more disgruntled than ever. And what it goes on to say is that there's 75% of people who are being interviewed at their exit interview saying that they're disgruntled with their company and they wouldn't recommend them to anybody else for employment. And that's up from 42% back in 2008. That's pretty disturbing numbers. And, you know, you think about it, and it's really not because of money. People aren't saying it's because of projects they're on. Basically, what it comes down to is they're saying that management and companies are just creating the sense that they just don't care about people. If you look at another article here, how stress, office stress invades our homes. You know, there used to be a time where the only thing that invaded our homes were termites, roaches, and bed bugs, and now we have to worry about stress. And this goes on to tell us how people are carrying office stress into their personal lives, and it's eroding their personal relationships. And then we look at the last article here, are your coworkers killing you? You know, this goes on to talk about the fact that our relationships with our coworkers, you know, people, it actually has, they're doing studies that it has an impact on someone's mortality depending how their coworkers treat them. So we need to look at that and start thinking, you know, we better do something about this, you know. And my question here is, as project managers, can we do something about this? I mean, our day-to-day activities and our interactions with people, we should be able to make these environments better for people, which in turn will make things better for ourselves as well. Now, here's some trends on the positive side. You know, if you look at LinkedIn and, you know, there's a lot of discussions, you know, some positive, not some so positive. But some of the trends I'm starting to see is, I like the first one. It talks about project management humor. And again, 12 laughs a day is good for you. And it's nice to see that even in project management, we're starting to see some humorous things. The next one from PM Link talks about how do you motivate teams and projects. So people are wanting to get back to thinking about how to treat people, how to motivate teams, how to promote teamwork. The next one talks about supreme significance. You know, not only about the job and what we do at the job and, you know, what our accomplishments there, but basically how do we build a legacy for ourselves? If you look at the top on the next column, it talks about soft skills required to be a project manager. This was a very interesting link. Again, people talking about the importance of soft skills, getting back to that, integrating that into our work environments. The next thing talks about International Project Management Day. That's coming up in a few weeks, and that's basically, the theme there is creating a power exchange, a transfer of information that boosts team members' accountability and performance. So again, breaking down silos, exchanging information, empowering people. The PMI in Taipei, they're talking about this year the new era of project management, connecting the world. Again, the inclusiveness. And what's not on this page is a blog that I came across. The title was Blog's Four Biggest Lies About Social Media, and it was by BNet. And it goes on to say that the lie about social media is that it's all about asking for something, a job, a sale, business, etc. But the truth behind social media is that it really should be saying it's all about asking people how you can help them. That's really the essence of social media. All right, so we as project managers have a great start, all right, to start doing things, to start building better work environments, to start adding to peace. We have the project management soft skills per the PMBOK. And the first thing we need to do is look at these, okay, the leadership, team building, all the way through the negotiation, the things that are in the PMBOK that we know as our soft skills. And step one, we need to focus on increasing our soft skills maturity level. That's the building block. Now, we all know that, you know, budgets are tight in the office. They're not spending dollars for training. And it may fall on our shoulders to get our own training. We have to increase our awareness of these soft skills. We need to invest some time, maybe some money, in our self-study and our research. And most importantly, we need to take action and implement what we learn from these soft skills. So let's take a look at some of these soft skills. And again, this is taken exactly the way it is in the PMBOK. But what I have here highlighted are the key words and the essence of these soft skills. So look at leadership. You know, we're talking about focusing, common goal, enabling, ability to get things done through others. And I would say that, you know, there's a way effectively to get things done through others and a not so effective way. But we have to focus on the effective way to get things done through other people. Respect, trust, communicating the vision, motivating, inspiring, maintaining that vision, fostering trust, influencing, mentoring, monitoring, and evaluating. That's the true essence of leadership, our soft skills, and we need to consciously think about how we perform in our leadership roles. And then we have team building. Helping, common sense of purpose, work interdependently, teamwork, interpersonal behavior, communication, conflict management, motivation, leadership, support, encouraging, rewarding, trust, open communication, again, leadership and ethics. And one thing here it mentions is team identity. It's so important when you're building teams is to give them an identity. I had a situation when I worked back at one of my companies, and I was chartered with taking over what they called the core team. And this core team kept the major calculations of the financial business up and running. And they worked around the clock. And basically, they were individuals who were siloed. They didn't talk much to other people, head down to the grindstone, and just doing their work to make sure businesses were up and running. The team didn't get much recognition. And when I basically stepped into the role, the first thing I needed to do was make a team out of them. So what I decided to do was, it was interesting, I created this flyer, and I put on it core team. And I went around and posted on each of their offices or cubes, wherever they sat. And by the next meeting, it was amazing how the team bonded. They called themselves the core team. They talked to each other, which was amazing to me. And they even stepped outside themselves and started to offer their help on other people in the organization who might have needed help in technology-related issues. And I saw a change in night and day just by giving the team an identity. The next, we talk about motivation. So creating an environment to meet project objectives, relating to what people value most, satisfaction, challenging work, sense of accomplishment, achievement, growth, rewards, and recognition. Again, the essence of motivation. Influencing, sharing power. I would also add, it's about sharing our insights, sharing our information that we have, sharing lessons learned that we have, help mentoring, whatever we can to help influence people by sharing what we know. Interpersonal skills, common goals. Lead by example, and make sure if we're leading by example, we're setting a good example. The follow through, being flexible, and embracing collaboration. And the key thing here to remember is influencing does not mean threatening people. Communication. This is the biggest reason for project success or failure. And, you know, we all know as project managers, our job is 90% communication. Also, we need to be open. We need to improve the relationships of the people that we work with. We need to create mutual trust, mutual understanding, awareness, interpersonal skills, team building activities, know your team member communication styles. You know, there's people who are directive, collaborative, logical, they're explorers. And I would say there's also people that are mute. They don't say much, some don't talk at all, but you need to find out ways to communicate with those people as well. The most important thing that I see also, which is mentioned here, in communication is listening and employing listening skills, you know, and having insight to things that you're getting from people as they talk to you. along those lines, you know, one of the effective techniques of listening is writing those things down as you're listening to somebody, you know, summarizing it back to them so they know that you got the essence of what they're saying, and making sure that it's accurate. When you're going to communicate something out, especially when you're doing status reports, double check, triple check, have other people look at it, make sure that communication is accurate. You know, sometimes communication in business is like playing the game telephone. You know, I have younger children, and, you know, we play the game telephone, and, you know, you start with a message, and by the time you get to the last person, that message has really changed. And a lot of that happens in our organizations. I mean, we just have to think of what happens when, you know, from our client's perspective, we get a client requirement. From the time they put a requirement in place to the time we get it, it's changed. It's even changed more by the time we've implemented something. So we really have to listen, document, follow up, make sure it's accurate, and, you know, tie this all together with effective communication. Around decision making, we have trust. Involve the project team. Fully explore, clarify, and define the problem. Brainstorming. You know, select the best solution. You know, don't settle for just anything. And I always look at the fact that whenever you're coming up with a solution, you really need to have at least three. You know, if you have three solutions, you really can make a decision. If you have two options, it's no longer a decision. It's really a dilemma. It's either this or that. And if you have one potential solution, I call that a hostage situation because there's nothing else. You're held hostage to that one solution. We need to involve key participants. And again, evaluation is key, both especially post-implementation for lessons learned going forward so that we don't make the same mistakes on how we made past decisions. Political and cultural awareness, you know, skillful use of politics and power. Global environment, culture diversity, mutual trust, win-win atmosphere, really key to get to know the various team members, communication planning, and what I have here highlighted in red, this is the kiss of death to everything that we do, is we need to avoid the impulse to act without appropriate planning. We really need to plan, whether it's a conversation we're having with somebody, we should plan it out. How are they going to be affected by the conversation? Especially when we're talking about people across cultures. You know, we really have to keep in mind who we're talking to. You know, a good book that gives insight to that is a book called Kiss, Bow, or Shake Hands. You always have to be mindful of their customs. I have people who visit me from overseas. If I don't kiss them on both cheeks, they think there's something wrong. You know, when a guy shakes my hand, if I just shake his hand and don't give him the hug, again, think something's wrong because in their culture, it's a handshake with a hug. And also, you know, simple things like when we're doing meetings, we need to know who's in our environment. We're a global workforce now. You know, if we have people in let's say, India or the UK or Germany or even Israel, we need to make sure that we know, you know, the time zones. It's not fair to have all the meetings in a time zone where it's my normal work day and somebody else has taken meetings during the evening. You know, you have to switch that up a little bit, make it fair across the organization. Negotiation, compromise, reach an agreement, analyze, differentiate, focus, be realistic, yield something of value in a negotiation, and make sure both peer parties do feel that win-win and that they have won something in the negotiation. And again, key component of negotiation is listening. Now, if we look at all these soft skills and the highlighted items that we've gone through, you know, they really do, you know, from page 15 to page 20 that we just reviewed, a lot of these words that we've talked about do tie back to the basic rules of life that we discussed on page 7. So we have a good start with the soft skills. You know, and that's all nice and good, but I still don't think we're done. So let's look at some even softer skills, all right? So along the lines of our PMBOK soft skills, I think there's four major areas we can even look at to include in these soft skills. So the first one being inner peace. The second one would be humility. The third one would be others first. And the fourth one would be an awareness of humanity. And again, tying these together with our soft skills – As we mentioned before, the word consciousness, that's where it all begins. It all starts with our consciousness. So let's look at our soft skills breakdown, our softer skills breakdown, that is. We're looking at inner peace. We need to have inner peace within ourselves before we can even think about creating a peaceful environment external to us. We need to overcome the patterns that create negative emotions within us, and we need to take control over our lives to create inner peace for ourselves. We need to look at others first rather than what's in it for me. We need to think outside ourselves. Along the lines of humanity, we need to see the bigger picture. We need to see people, the ecology, the environment. We need to look globally. And then we need to look at our own humility. You know, we need to incorporate some more humbleness. And we may even have to shrink our ego a little bit. And basically at the nucleus of all this we're looking at is, again, our consciousness. So let's look at inner peace for a moment, all right? Things like self-awareness. We need to know about ourselves and how we impact other people. It's good to know our leadership style. You know, are we rough around the edges? Are we polished? You know, it reminds me of a story that I had with one of the managers I used to work for. And he told me, and he was pretty burly guy, and he was pretty strict. And he said to me, he says, you know, Ron, he says, I'd like to tell you that my leadership style is I can get people to do anything I need them to do. I can get them to jump off bridges. And I looked at him, and I said, you know what? I can also get my people to do whatever I need them to do, and I can actually get them to build those bridges that your people are jumping off of. So the key here is a self-awareness of what our leadership style is and what effect it has on people. We need to manage our mind, body, and soul, whether that means meditating, reading, music, exercise, study, travel, make sure you laugh a lot, embrace humor, whatever it takes to keep your mind, body, and soul at peace. Integrity. We need to do the right thing. I had a situation a few years ago where I had a business that went bad. And I was at the point of whether I should sell it or fold it. And my advisors told me that, you know, you really need to sell this business. And I thought about it and said, as bad as the business turned out to be, I could not put that business in front of another human being and be able to sleep at night. So I ended up not selling it, and I folded it. I took a major financial hit. It was very painful. But the way I look at it today is the way things turned out is beyond my wildest imagination. And, you know, thinking about that, having that type of integrity at that time, you know, only paid off multiple dividends for me in the future. We need to see the big picture. And not only the big picture, but how we fit into it. How do we add to it? How do we make it better? Again, how do we contribute to impact of peace? You know, who's responsible for peace? Not somebody else. We have to do our own part. It's really our responsibility to create peace around us. We should have passion for, you know, and a renewed sense of purpose or the things we do every day in our management life. We need to have certainty in our capabilities, certainty in the way we direct our teams, and definitely certainty in our teams. I mean, it's like a football coach. Football coaches are certain every week they're going to win, no matter who their opponent is, and that's the consciousness they inject into their teams. We need to do the same with our team. Regardless of the results and the outcome, on the onset, we have to inject that consciousness that we're certain that we're going to be successful. A positivity. We need to remain positive. You know, positivity and positive attitude are attitudes we can create or destroy. You know, and to that, you know, there's a study. If we look on page 34, I'm not going to jump ahead here, but there is a study, and it's in the appendix of this presentation, by Dr. Masaru Emoto. And basically it's called The Messages from the Water. And what study goes on to say is that they've taken water and they've put it under a microscope, and they've subjected the water to positive and negative emotions. So be it words, be it somebody's voice, whatever the case is. And the study shows that when you put negativity in front of water, the picture under the microscope is very disturbing. But when you put positivity, the molecules line up to something that's much more appealing to the eye. Now, he also goes on to say that, you know, the fact that humans are made of 80% water. So if you look at the correlation of the impact that positivity or negativity has on water, and the fact that humans are 80% water, you know, our positive actions and the things we say really do have an impact on people. And we really need to keep that in mind. Again, with our actions, we can create or we can destroy. Are proactive versus reactive. You know, we really need to think about that. Many situations that come to us in management create us to be situations where we're reactive. It's a knee-jerk reaction, an impulse response. You know, we really need to think about those things and be more proactive than reactive. And to that point, also I provided in this presentation on page 33 a little helpful sheet that can help you every day. It's something called the proactive formula. And basically it goes something like this. A situation is put in front of you. Could be a challenge, difficult situation. Instead of reacting, what we really need to do is acknowledge that it's an opportunity for self-improvement. So, you know, you have a person at work who's been getting on your nerves, has been doing something, you know, and they bring something to you that basically is going to create a reaction from you. You need to stop and really think about the fact that, okay, I'm not going to let this situation get me. I'm going to identify the reaction I'm having inside. I'm going to stop reacting and think about now how I can turn this situation into a sharing opportunity with that person. And once you think about it, then move on and proceed, and now deal with the situation with the consciousness of sharing. Again, that can diffuse so many issues that we have with people, with situations that come our way, and it's very powerful little tool to just remember the proactive formula. So let's move on to the next portion, which basically talks about others first. So what do we mean by others first? Well, basically it's getting outside of ourselves, not thinking about what's in it for me all the time. So we need to be sharing. We need to be supporting, you know, uplifting people. We need to develop people, the teams, individuals. We need to help elevate them to the next level. I can tell you that most of the promotions I received when I was working as a full-time manager were not from a solution I came up with, were not from some idea that I came up with. It always was tied to the fact that I made somebody else successful, whether it was a team, got an individual promoted, how I handled the team, built the team. My promotions always came in line with that. We need to have people's best interest at heart. Now, again, how do my actions impact people? Appreciation. We really need to show people that we appreciate them. We don't do that enough. We're quick to possibly judge people, blame people, you know, see the not so good. But we need to appreciate them, and not only appreciate them, but tell them we appreciate them. You know, let them know a thank you, a nice job, you know, something. And one of the biggest things that I see that we come across that would show appreciation, aside from the rewards, aside from the thank yous and everything, I'm still troubled by when I'm working as a consultant in these organizations, is the yearly appraisals. The yearly appraisals always create some kind of chaos in an organization. Now, people don't feel like they're treated fairly. I hear things that, you know, my boss told me that I should write my own appraisal and he'll just sign it. You know, that's really not what an appraisal is all about. And if you really want to show somebody you appreciate them, then you take the time to learn something about them, know the objectives that they have, and make notes along the way of how they're doing to those objectives, so that when you sit down, there really should be an appraisal coming from you if you're their superior, if you're their boss. You should be able to sit down and give a real appraisal as opposed to having somebody write their own appraisal and you just sign it off on it with what you think the level should be. So again, I think that shows, for me, that always showed appreciation. And people came back to me and they always said to me, listen, I really enjoyed the fact that you took the time and gave me a real appraisal. And that was one of the best things that I can hear from somebody as far as proving to me that, you know, that I was showing them appreciation. We need to be nurturing and helpful. We need to connect to people. We need to know people, understand them. We need to be accommodating where possible. And if we can't be accommodating, there's a nice way to let them know we can't accommodate them. Understand issues and how to help. Fairness, we should keep it positive. There's ways to deliver information that people do not want to hear in a fair and a positive way. And we need to be part of community involvement. We need to, again, get outside ourselves. We need to participate in activities, create activities, support a cause, and be involved. And again, the biggest thing that I would say here is, you know, the willingness to share with others. You know, we receive bonuses, we receive money, we receive gifts, we receive blessings. Things that come to us in life come to us because we receive for the sake of sharing. It's not all about what we get. It's how we handle the blessings we get in life. So we need to keep that in mind. And it's not about the easy sharing. You know, it's easy to share with people we know, with friends, relatives. I'm talking about sharing with people that, you know, maybe are a little tougher than to deal with than some. You know, and it's not all about money. It's maybe sharing time with them. It's getting to understand them. It's listening to them. So there's other forms of sharing. And again, the key there is, you know, not only the easy sharing. You have to do some of the sharing that's difficult. And to sum this section up, one of the things to keep in remember is there's five powerful words we always have to remember. And those words are, when we deal with people, we always have to be asking them, how can I help you? That is the essence of putting others first, is how we can help other people. And we have to remember that, you know, life's an echo. Whatever you send out will come back. So we have to keep that in mind. So we're moving on to humanity. All right, we're looking at things like respect, caring, empathy, mercy, kindness, understanding, tolerance, compassion, the environment, the ecology. You know, it was last year, I believe, that ex-President Bill Clinton spoke at the PMI Global Congress, and he said that project managers will play a significant role in taking on the toughest global challenges. So as project managers, we need to have that awareness and even get involved in that. You know, why not, you know, take on projects that are that tough? You know, be involved with not-for-profit organizations, bringing our skills to those organizations, again, to make this world a better place. And the other thing I would talk about on this page is basically, you know, we have to be careful of what we say. You know, we have to be aware of our words. You know, nothing, I guess, disturbs me more than, you know, you go through this team-building exercise. You create teams. You want teams to be effective and efficient, and then somebody, or maybe even ourselves, we say something that's not so kind, you know, and then that's the quickest way to erode the team, that the word gets back. And many times it's not even factual. It's maybe a perception, you know, something like an example. One of the examples I do when I present live is, you know, we talk about this fact that I work with two people and I say, all right, here's a dish. And in this dish, I'm going to put some sugar in there. And that sugar is representing a person's good qualities, the fact that they get the job done, the fact that they're, you know, willing to take on more challenges, the fact that they're very personable to their coworkers, and the sugar represents that. So then I ask another person, I say, okay, now you have a perception of a person, of the same person, and basically I want you to think of negative perceptions of that person. And every time you think of a negative perception, I want you to throw some salt into that dish. And, okay, so things like the person's, you know, a slacker, or they're a clock watcher, or they, you know, they're not a team player, they're obnoxious, or maybe we just say some things that we've overheard in a rumor, so we throw that out there. So as we're saying those things, I have the person throw in salt into that dish. So now you have a plate in front of you that has salt and sugar mixed. So the next thing I say to the folks who are helping me, I say, all right, so those perceptions were untrue. All those negative things that you said were not true about the person. It was proven that none of those things are reality. So now what we need to do is we need to go back and we need to take all the salt away from the sugar. And obviously, that's an impossible task, because once the salt and the sugar mix, you can't undo it. That's a metaphor for the way it is in life. Once we put that ill speech, the negative talk about people or the team, you know, you can't take it back. It leaves a residue. And although sometimes people will forgive you for saying certain things, you know, the truth of the matter is they just don't forget. We'll move on to talk about humility. All right. Again, being a little more humble. We need to, you know, maybe reduce our ego. You know, it's not all about us. We need to, you know, not take ourselves so seriously. Good story to this is I was going for a major consulting position, and I was narrowed down to three people throughout the country. And the person who was sitting across from me said, "Ron, why do we pick you for this initiative? You live probably the furthest away, and you're the most expensive. So why do we pick you for this?" And right away, you know, I had those reactions where I wanted to hurry up and defend myself and tell the people, you know, the people that were interviewing me why I was right for this job and my background and everything. And I got this, and I thought about it. I said, well, let me just react, not react. Let me just restrict my reaction. And the thing that came into my mind and what I said was, because I have no ego. And I don't know where it came from. I just uttered those words. And they said to me, he said, well, what do you mean you have no ego? I says, well, I come to this job with no hidden agenda. I'm not looking for a job at the end of it. I'm not looking to take anybody's position. I come here to assist you in your success. And with that, I got the job, which ended up being the largest contract that I ever had as a consultant. And again, it was just from those four words, I have no ego, which ended up getting me the job. So again, we have to, sometimes it's tough, but we have to shrink our egos a little bit. Now here I talk about the five extensions of ego. We have anger, hatred, pride, control, and judgment. Now fear is also thrown in there. Fear is actually an extension of our ego as well. We've talked about control a little bit. And, you know, it's a funny thing that even though we hear about monitoring and controlling projects, when you really think about it, control is an illusion. We really don't control projects. What I would say we do is we're facilitators. So we need to be the best facilitators we can be. And again, this reminds me of a situation where I was working in an organization. A gentleman came to me, and I was asking about his project plan and how comfortable he was. And he basically came across a little bit of attitude and said, listen, I'm fine. I got everything under control. He said, there's no problems here. And I said, well, I really got to think about that. He said, are you sure you thought about everything? And he says, yep, I got it all handled. It's all under control. So I turned around and said to him, I says, well, you know, it is December, and, you know, we are upon flu season. And if half your staff is out for a week with the flu, can you still meet your deadlines? At which point, he really didn't have an answer. But the point there is, we can think we have everything in line and everything and planned for, but the truth of the matter is we don't control the situation. The other thing I would talk about here is anger. I've seen people in the office place get very angry, very quick. We have to, again, we need to think more proactively. We need to not get angry. We need to think things through. It's always the guy who throws the second punch that gets blamed for the fight. You know, every time I've seen these situations, nobody sees the first punch or the first issue. They always see the retaliation. So we got to be careful about that and handle things in a better way. The other thing I would talk about here is, you know, judgment. We got to make sure that, you know, we're not really judging people. It's true that we have to evaluate people against their objectives, but we really can't judge people and their character and so forth. And, you know, a good example of that is I work with people and I say, okay, if you take a piece of paper and roll it up to make it look like a telescope, kind of like we did when we were kids, and you put it up to one eye and cover your other eye with your other hand, and the only thing you see is the vision in that circle from that paper. That represents about 1% of what's around us. And that's true in life. You know, we only see, our senses only let us see 1% of what's going on at any given time. So we got to make sure that we're not judging people and we really work to get the full information and not be so judgmental. And then the last point here I would say is controlling our ego. We need to make sure we're reaching out people to people to give us feedback on how we are operating, on how we interact with people. Sometimes it's the toughest thing to do, but we need to let down our guard and let people give us positive, constructive, maybe sometimes not so positive criticism, and that's what helps shape us and will get us to the next level. Okay, so, you know, we talked about all this stuff, and that's great, but, you know, so how is peace possible? Well, you know, there's enough of us, as we talked about before, 15 to 20 million of us project managers, and if we start to shift our individual consciousness, you know, whether you believe in the physical realm, the metaphysical, the scientific, pseudoscientific, philosophical, even religious or spiritual, you know, everything out there is connected. And, you know, as we start to shift our individual consciousness, we will add to what's called the collective consciousness. And what this would be and is it's a shared beliefs and moral attitudes. And as the more people start embracing and shifting their consciousness and being, you know, better in the soft skills, taking it up a notch, you know, this is the unifying force within society that would take place. And this would be a direct link to universal cause and effect. So in summary, you know, I felt that I had to put some formulas in front of the group for, you know, since we are project managers. And we'll just go through them pretty quickly. You know, we have peace. I say peace equals mutual harmony. New success formula is equals love plus caring plus inclusiveness. Inner peace equals balance of mind, body, and soul. And I would actually add here, throw a little humor in this as well. Humility is equal to ego reduction minus X percent. And we all have to think about what that percentage is for our own character. We need to think others first, caring plus sharing, minus the judgment, negative speech, and the what's in it for me. We need to work with passion and enthusiasm, a sense of purpose for everyday tasks. Yes, we can be ambassadors of peace. It's all about our consciousness. And that consciousness times the mastering of the soft skills and the even softer skills. I put an equation here from, I used to be a programmer as well. So if positivity is greater than negativity, then we create, otherwise we destroy. And always remember the proactive versus the reactive in that proactive formula that we talked about before. And again, the nucleus of all this is it all starts with shifting our own consciousness. And in conclusion, I'd like to end with two things. The first thing being a line from the 1991 movie, The Man in the Moon, where the father, played by Sam Waterston, was talking to his daughter, Reese Witherspoon. And what he said was, we all have different levels of pains and challenges, but if we don't look beyond ourselves to help others with their pains and challenges, we might as well dig a hole, jump in, and pull the dirt down over us. And my quote here that I would end with is, if we consciously use our project management soft skills, and even softer skills looking beyond ourselves, to help others with their issues, assist in the avoidance of chaos, and add to the quality of life of other human beings, then we just may be creating peace through project management within our work environments, personal lives, communities, and who knows, even maybe globally. So with that, I'd like to thank you for having me share this information this evening. And with that, if there's any questions, I would love to talk about it.
Can go ahead and talk there. I'm going to open up the lines now, Ron, so that people can make comments if they want to. I had muted them.
Okay.
So I've opened up the lines. Does anybody have any questions or comments on Ron's presentation? Well, Ron, I'm going to try to jump in here and ask you a question. I know that you had talked about the applying this with your proactive formula was one of the things that you mentioned. Do you have a slide on that you could show us?
Yes, I do. I'll skip down here. Oh, I think I lost the connection. Oh, there
right,
it is.
That's okay. Well, why don't you go ahead and go over it? And
oh, wait a minute. See if I can get it back.
Still there.
We're here? Okay.
So, yep.
You see it?
Yep.
On the screen?
Sure. There you go.
Yeah, so this is something that I basically, you know, I shrunk it down to wallet size and I carried it, and now it's pretty much ingrained in my head. But it's, again, this is the proactive formula. It helps me not only in my business life, but my personal life as well. So, again, you talk about, you know, step one, a difficult situation arises. You acknowledge it and acknowledge that it's an opportunity for personal self-improvement or growth, no matter what that is, a difficult situation, a difficult, challenging person at the office. Again, you always have to think about it. It's a challenge, but it's an opportunity for self-improvement. So identify your reaction. What reaction are you feeling? Are you feeling anger? Are you feeling, you know, you want to disengage? You know, what is that reaction? You need to restrict that action and then stop the reaction from actually happening. And then start thinking about how you can be sharing in that moment, and how you can turn that situation around and how you want to proceed. And then the last piece there is now go deal with the situation, but have the consciousness in there of how you're going to share, how you're going to make the situation better. And again, it's a very powerful formula.
Thank you. I think that one of the things that you were trying to make a point of in the presentation was that you feel as though we as project managers, because we are leaders, can lead to a more peaceful climate. Do you have any other stories that you could share with us that, you know, would show how you were able to accomplish that in maybe a climate that wasn't quite so peaceful?
A lot of times, you know, you have to be willing to, you know, take it on the chin. It's probably the best way to say it. This is a story from, I don't want to mention the company name, but it's going back quite a few years, and I was a project manager, and I was managing quite a few people. Actually, I'm sorry, I was promoted to systems manager, but bottom line is I was in a meeting, and I was told going to this meeting that I'm going to go into a meeting where there's a lot of reactive people, and they tend to get loud. And I was told that, and I said, okay, well, I can handle it. So I went to this meeting, and sure enough, during the meeting, one of the managers started to get, you know, a little rowdy, was actually screaming at people, using some profanities and things like that. And, you know, I can take that when it comes to me. You know, somebody wants to say something to me and wants to try and, you know, look bad or scream or whatever they want to do. Because, again, it's not about controlling the person. It's about my reaction to things. So in this particular situation, it wasn't directed at me, but this manager was actually screaming and started to yell at one of the people or one of my direct reports. And that's one thing I wouldn't go for, is I would never let my direct people that reported to me or their people get attacked in any situation. I always know my job is to provide air cover, no matter what the situation is. So in this particular meeting, they were screaming at one of my people. And I looked at the manager and I said, listen, with all due respect, I really don't appreciate you yelling at, you know, my person. At which point he yelled at me and yelled at the person even louder. So I said, okay, well, you know, that's basically, you know, it can't be productive if we're going to keep in this tone of voice. And again, it just got worse. So what I ended up doing is I just said, well, then you're going to have to excuse me. And I took my team and we stood up and we left the meeting. Now, again, I didn't add to the commotion or the chaos. And actually, by taking my team out, you know, I put myself in a position, because this was a manager who was senior to me, and I probably could have lost my job, but I didn't care. I wasn't going to have my person be humiliated and yelled at in front of a group of people. And as it turned out, that manager actually came back to me later and really thanked me for, you know, taking my team out and making that situation better. because he realized after the meeting that he was just losing control of his temper, and that nothing was going to help short of me taking that team out of the room. So, you know, sometimes there's drastic measures, you know, sometimes not so drastic, but that's one instance I can think of.
Anyone else have any questions or comments for Ron before we sign off? Come on, some of your folks on the phone must have some questions. Anybody have a similar situation where they might be able to apply some peace through project management as a project manager?
I can also give the example of what I'm seeing these days is there's quite a few silos that I see in the workplace. You know, people are more and more not willing to share the information they know. They create, you know, blockages to people trying to get to the information to, you know, in various situations, and not so willing to share what they know to help. And I think it comes down to what I see is a lot of people afraid for their jobs, think that by hoarding that information and keeping to the silo that it's actually going to benefit them in some way. But what I try to work with people and let them see is the fact by sharing that information and breaking those silos, you know, that's where the inclusiveness comes in. We need not to be afraid to share the information. I mean, one of the things that, you know, you share information with more people, you may get promoted faster because now you're not the only one person who knows it. And even if it doesn't lead to a promotion, you know, there's nothing wrong with helping another coworker, another individual. You know, we're all basically the same fabric, so why not help where we can?
Oh, does anybody else have any comments before we
Ron? Yeah,
yes.
Can you hear me?
I'm
kind of looking at your proactive formula for a while here now as you're talking, but I could kind of relate to it pretty well. I think number three is I don't necessarily think I know I do that particular thing cognitively.
Right.
But, you know, number one, for instance, you know, like people say, you know, change is good, where most of the time people are, you know, over changing this and everybody's aggravated all of a sudden. And I know that I always look for, there's got to be something good.
Yes.
And, you know, I have that consciousness. Identifying my reaction, I kind of do try to keep a calm, you know, just without emotion and all that kind of stuff. You just try to analyze this, what's going on. I just try to keep myself analytical and like that. But the third part here is interesting to me, and I think I'll kind of pay attention to that going forward, see how it can be sharing. I kind of am, but I don't really do it cognitively. But I'll pay attention to that going forward. And, of course, dealing with the situation, I do deal with it, but not with the consciousness of sharing necessarily, but a consciousness of let's all get into a better situation. We're going to do this, and we'll all be happy.
Right.
So
in that situation, you actually are sharing because you're thinking of other people being happy with the outcome. So that
yeah.
in itself could be looked at as sharing. It's not that it's a, you know, you stop, you've identified your reaction and, okay, I've identified it, but now I'm still going to go through. It sounds like you're already thinking about things on how this could benefit people. So that is a sharing
yeah.
gesture.
That's true. And how it could benefit, I think a lot of how I feel it benefits people is to kind of guide them along into this is going to make us all work better in the future if we kind of go along with this way of thinking about it.
Right.
An example might be, as a manager at one point, and we had part of my job was part of what I managed was a help desk kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and had situations at time where some of the people as they're taking the call, it was outside customers, and they would get one customer or two that, you always have the ones that call up and they like to complain and moan and groan. And so then you get after the calls, you get people talking about this one and that one. And I kind of, and then it kind of like, as they're trying to, bring me into it, I kind of just say, well, I think these are customers. And
right.
Because I got customers, I got a job. And, and I think when I deal with a customer, I just try to, listen to them, let them rant and rave, but then at the end say, okay, now let's figure out what you got and get their things fixed up and go on in life. It doesn't really change the person, I don't find, but...
if you're talking about the customer, we'll go back to those five powerful words. You listen to them and then say, well, how can I help you?
Yeah, that's it. But doing that in front of my team changed them as well.
Absolutely.
And I think it made it better for the whole project and like.
Yeah, and along the same lines, in my career, I've seen a lot of people complain about clients, customers, and I always told them, I said, well, be thankful for those folks because that's why we're here.
Okay, we're on the same wavelength. Well, thanks for your presentation then, Ron.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to share.
Yes, Ron, thank you very much for taking the time out to share your presentation here with project managers on the call and the many that will be dialing later to listen to this over the phone. And then we also have hundreds of people that download the presentation in a podcast form. So thank you very much for sharing with us all. And I'm going to close with saying thank you to all of you for spending your time to try to further your education in the project management profession and trying to increase your ability to become peace givers and peacekeepers as project managers. And I'm sure that Ron would agree with me that if you could just apply some of these things that you learned tonight, you'll be able to make the world around you a better place for people to live in. So thank you for spending the time to listen and to learn. As I always say, thank you for joining us and keep on learning. I'm going to shut off the recording at this point, and as we usually do, we'll have a little bit of time of sharing afterwards and networking with the folks that are still on the line. Thanks for joining us.